waiting for VOA News.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Thursday, December 14th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Nearly 200 countries signed a deal to transition away from fossil fuels at the COP28 Climate Summit in Dubai.
It is a plan that is led by the science. It is a balanced plan that tackles emissions.
A DRC opposition candidate suspends part of his campaign due to violence. The World Bank approves debt relief for Somalia, and the IMF is expected to also back the measure. A Sierra Leone Court of Appeal orders the arrest of a former presidential candidate. Meanwhile, former President Ernest Bai Koroma is expected to make another appearance today, Thursday, before the police for questioning.
He has been informed through counsel and through other operatives that there are restrictions regarding his movement, and sometimes understandably so, with regards to matters of this nature.
There were new developments on Wednesday in the apparent governance crisis in Nigeria's River State. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Nearly 200 countries have signed a deal to transition away from fossil fuels at the COP28 Climate Summit in Dubai. The summit's president called it a historic agreement, but not all nations are satisfied, as Henry Richwell reports.
A deal in the desert that proponents say heralds the end of the age of oil. All 198 nations present at the COP28 climate summit in Dubai signed up to the final deal. For the first time, the agreement calls on all countries to transition away from fossil fuels, the main driver of climate change. COP28 President Sultan Al Jaber praised the deal.
It is a plan that is led by the science. It is a balanced plan that tackles emissions, bridges the gap on adaptation, reimagines global finance, and delivers on loss and damage.
Many delegates welcomed the agreement after 2 weeks of hard-fought negotiations. Among them, U.S. climate envoy John Kerry.
Everybody here should be pleased that in a world of Ukraine and the Middle East war and all the other challenges of a planet that is foundering, this is a moment where multilateralism has actually come together and people have taken individual interests and attempted to define the common good.
More than 100 countries had lobbied for stronger language to fully phase out fossil fuels. But oil-producing states, led by Saudi Arabia, argued that the world can slash emissions without shunning specific fuels. That prompted criticism from some delegates, including the most vulnerable island nations. Anne Rasmussen is chair of the Alliance of Small Island States.
We have made an incremental advancement over business as usual, when what we really needed is an exponential step change in our actions and support.
Jean Su of the Center for Biological Diversity said the language of the text was too weak.
On the one hand, this is a good sign and signal that the world is finally dealing with fossil fuels after almost three decades of refusing to deal with it. But on the other hand, the new text includes cavernous loopholes that will allow for the oil and gas industry to continue.
That includes the use of so-called carbon capture technology, which removes some carbon dioxide emissions. Ruth Townend, a climate policy expert at Chatham House.
The energy transition to renewables is far more feasible than trying to capture carbon from the atmosphere. We know what we need to do, and governments now need to find ways that work for them economically and politically to commit to that and then deliver it. And that needs to happen very fast.
Scientists say we need to cut greenhouse gas emissions by 43% in just 6 years to meet the target of limiting global warming to 1.5 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial levels. It remains to be seen whether this COP28 deal marks a turning point or another missed opportunity. Henry Ridgewell, VOA News, London.
In the Democratic Republic of Congo, Moise Katumbi, one of the main opposition candidates for that country's December 20 presidential election, suspended part of his campaign on Wednesday after violent clashes at one of his election rallies. Reuters news agency reports that live rounds were fired and several people injured as Katumbi addressed supporters in the coastal town of Mwanda. On Tuesday, reporter Al Katanti Sibiti Jaffa in Eastern DRC joins us with details.
Moise Katumbi announced the suspension of his campaign in the south provinces of DRC, Western Kasai, Eastern Kasai, and Central Kasai. These provinces are where the President Tshisekedi is originate. And this is because of what happened yesterday, 12 December, in Mwanda, a city in Western Congo, where, when campaigning, talking to locals, Moise Katumbi was attacked by who are supposed to be members of Tshisekedi political party. And when attacking, these people used stone on Moise Katumbi and other people who were in his meeting. And policemen had to intervene by using gunshots and tear gas. You must know that during that incident, many people were injured, including one of Moise Katumbi's bodyguards.
Can you tell us who the perpetrators of the latest incident are?
We still don't have much information on who were the actors of what happened yesterday, because according to a communique from the governor of Congo Central Province, it was a group of members of a political party who was campaigning in the same area with Moise Katumbi, without naming which political party is. But according to Moise Katumbi and his team, these people were members of UDPS and MLC, the political party of the President Tshisekedi, and the political party of Jean-Pierre Bemba, the Minister of Defense.
Meanwhile, the election is next week. How does this incident impact the campaign of the other candidates?
This incident has impacted negatively the campaign of opponents. As we know now, Moise Katumbi won't go anymore in Kasai provinces because these provinces are close to the current president, and he thinks that it won't be a good idea for his security and also the security of people who will come on his rally. And it's not even an isolated case, because when the President Tshisekedi was campaigning in Goma, a candidate at the provincial level in North Kivu was arrested because he was asking freedom to Salu Mukalonda, who is a close collaborator of Moise Katumbi. Mbumbere Lumumba was arrested and is still missing till now.
That was reporter Jaffa Al-Katanti speaking with us from Goma, Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo. The World Bank has approved debt relief for Somalia, and the IMF is expected to also approve the measure. This allows Somalia to have its debt forgiven by both the bilateral and multilateral creditors. The country's debt to GDP ratio will go down from $5.2 billion to around $600 million, according to the World Bank. The news comes as President Hassan Sheikh Mohamed is leading a large delegation in Washington, D.C. Somalia Finance Minister Bihi Imar Iga tells reporter Haroon Maruf of VOA Somali Service that his country welcomes the debt forgiveness.
It is a huge milestone, and we are really proud. The reform implementation that has been undertaken over the last 10 years. So to see that Somalia has reached the completion point, it entails a huge achievement. At the same time, it's also a huge responsibility, because Somalia has to stand on its feet, sustain on the reform gains that has been made over the years, and also enhance the domestic revenue mobilization so that we will be able to meet our domestic operations. But this has been a collective effort that has been contributed by the Somali people and the Somali government, as well as also our international partners. So partnership has been a critical aspect in achieving this success, but also it speaks to the commitment and the determination of the Somali people, particularly the leadership.
Are you contemplating on taking new loans?
As you know, our debt carrying capacity is very low. Our domestic revenue is also low, despite huge efforts that has actually increased our domestic revenue by 25% for the last 5 months. But still, you know, our domestic revenue is very low in, if you compare to other African countries, and when particularly if you look at the tax to GDP ratio, which is close to 3%, and the average in Africa is 15%. So with that fact, we are not actually contemplating taking any new loans, because that comes with huge responsibility when it comes to debt servicing. So we are actually striving to enhancing and strengthening our domestic revenue so that we will be able to meet our domestic operations and in the future, in the near future, to also cover some of the development needs.
Tell me exactly how much do you collect now? What is the domestic revenue, the amount of money that you collect now, and how much budgetary support or grants do you receive externally? And if there are any shortcomings, how are you going to fill up the any budget gaps? How are you going to avoid?
That's a very good question. The domestic revenue, if you look at our 2024 appropriation bill, the domestic revenue is close to, I think it's more than, it's close to 40%, 35% roughly. In real numbers, it is 345 million annually. And the kind of external support that we are anticipating in 2024 mainly comes from two sources. The multilateral donors, mainly the World Bank and the African Development Bank, which goes to mainly on capital investment, particularly in development projects, as well as also some budget support that also comes from the bank, the World Bank. But we are also looking forward to receive some bilateral support from the Turkish government, as well as also from the European Union.
Somali Finance Minister Bihi Ima Iga was speaking with reporter Harun Maruf of the VOA Somali Service. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, December 14. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. In Sierra Leone, former President Ernest Bai Koroma is expected to make yet another appearance today, Thursday, before the police for questioning about his alleged role in the alleged coup attempt on December 26. This week, the police named him as one of the suspects in the purported plot. This will be his fifth appearance. According to the French news agency AFP, the government announced on Saturday that the former president had been placed under house arrest. Joseph Fitzgerald Camara is the lawyer for former President Koroma. He tells me the former president has been cooperating with what he calls an almost 25 hours a day interrogation.
When he was invited to appear before the police at the Criminal Investigation Department, he complied with the law. He appeared before them, and I was there with him as counsel. And we had conversation about the statement taken and when to do it and how to do it. The modalities for that were discussed. And he complied fully. He made statement to the police. He was questioned. And thereafter, he was allowed to go back to his residence in Freetown.
Okay, after the incident, the attack on the armory and the other areas, the police said among those arrested or even killed were some former security persons. Does the president acknowledge that or does he refute that?
Well, for now, it's only what the police report that we get. And the reportage from that is former guards, such as one named Leather Boot, Idrissa Camara is his real name, and another Kabar Dumbuya. These are names that you've had before, who were formerly with the president, with Dr. Ernest Bai Koroma, that they were allegedly involved in that fraud attempt. We have no further details with regards to that involvement, but questions have been posed to the former president about them. And of course, One, that is Idrissa Kamara, alias Leatherboot, had worked with him when he was president. But upon retirement, he had left him and said he was going on business. And he has been in and out, but there's never been any formal direct contact. And the other one, Kabal Dubuya, has also left his service since he went on retirement. So all of these that are going on, these are former soldiers or former officials attached to his office who have left his office. In one particular case, a military officer that was assigned to him had already bidded him farewell to go outside of the country. And so he shocked, extremely surprised at this incident that get close by way of persons that had worked for him.
So what is the status of the former president now? I mean, is he free to move around or is he under house arrest?
He has been informed through council and through other operatives that there are restrictions regarding his movement, and sometimes understandably so with regards to matters of this nature concerning his profile. And we've also been informed by the police yesterday in their briefing. There are certain restrictions that have been placed regarding his movement, particularly from his home. And as I speak to you, he's allowed to come to the office of the CID, that is the Criminal Investigation Department. He's escorted, and after which he goes back home. And as counsel, we've made a request for him to travel to McKinney, where he has his permanent residence, and that request is yet to be granted. So for now, he's at home, and he hasn't been moving around, and no particular request has been made for him to move. So with the status to whether house arrest or non-house arrest, to my mind, it appears semantics.
So is he expected to appear before the police again today, tomorrow?
Yes, tomorrow again to appear at the CID to continue the statement taken. That will be the fifth day, and we must say close to about 25 hours of interrogation.
Did you say how long are the interrogations?
Yes, tomorrow will be the fifth day, and it will be almost equivalent of 25 hours of continued interrogation.
Joseph Fitzgerald Kamara is the lawyer for former President Ernest Bai Koroma. He was speaking with me from the Sierra Leone capital, Freetown. The Court of Appeal in Sierra Leone has ordered the immediate arrest of Samura Kamara, the former presidential candidate of the main opposition All People's Congress APC party, for alleged corruption. The court ordered his delivery to the Anti-Corruption Commission for an investigation into what the court calls his alleged involvement in shady and secret deals. No further details were immediately available. According to the Electoral Commission of Sierra Leone, Kamara came in second to President Julius Maada Bio in the June 2023 election. Ade Macaulay is the lawyer for Samura Kamara. He tells me the appeals court's ruling is void because the matter is already before the Sierra Leone Supreme Court.
As you are aware, there was a Commission of Inquiry report that means 2020, which adverse comments vis-a-vis Dr. Samura Kamara. The adverse comments regarding Mr. Kamara were appealed to the Court of Appeal, and that appeal was argued by myself, and we had a judgment on Thursday in which the Court of Appeal dismissed the appeals that we filed against the outcome of the Commission of Inquiry.
I just have snippets of what is coming out of the court. When it says here that they ordered the under-sheriff to hand him over to the ACC for investigation over his involvement in a shady and secret deal, what are they talking about?
Well, the allegations themselves are very much uncertain because they are not saying Dr. Samura Kamara embezzled or misappropriated any monies. They are just allegations that he was involved in shady dealings, and they cannot tell us what those shady dealings are. What I can tell you is this. The government of Sierra Leone sold shares in Sierra Ruta Limited, for which monies were paid into the Bank of Sierra Leone government account. So my client was the Minister of Finance at the time, but there is nothing to suggest that there is anything wrong with what happened. It was a government decision to liquidate the holding of shares in a particular private company. So for me, this is just a pattern which my client has complained of, that there has been political witch hunts, that the Bio government has used state institutions to graft the political opponents.
That's what I wanted to ask you. This is happening at the same time former President Honest Bah Kuruman is being investigated for his alleged involvement in the November armed attack. What do you make of all these developments?
Well, my brief here is for Dr. Samuel Kumar. I mean, people can read into it what they think is the motivation behind the sudden uproar in state institution going against the former leader of the APC and the current leader of the APC. Some say when it rains, it really rains, and it appears that is what we are having now.
So what are your options? What are the options for Mr. Kamara? Are you going to appeal, and where can you appeal to?
I have already appealed on behalf of Dr. Samuel Kamara to the Supreme Court of Sierra Leone, which is the highest court of the land. In addition to that, I have also filed a stay of execution motion in the Court of Appeal, seeking a stay of execution of the threat of arrest and also of the demand that Dr. Samuel Kamara pay $723,000 within 14 days from the date of the judgment. So we have taken those steps already.
Ade Makole is the lawyer for Samura Kamara. He was speaking with us from the Sierra Leone capital, Freetown. There were new developments Wednesday in the apparent governance crisis in Nigeria's Rivers State. 27 members of the state's 32-member House of Assembly, all members of the governing People's Democratic Party, the PDP, defected this week to the opposition All Progressive Congress APC party. The Nigeria Daily Post newspaper reported Wednesday that the seats of all 27 affected lawmakers had been declared vacant by the Assembly Speaker. Also, the Rivers State government began demolishing the entire House of Assembly building complex. Joseph Johnson is Rivers State Commissioner for Information. He tells me the replacement of the 27 Assembly members who defected is in line with the Constitution, and that the demolition of the complex had been planned before the political developments.
On the 29th of October, there was an explosion in the Rivers State House of Assembly, and the impact of that explosion affected the integrity of the structure. And then there was an expert assessment that confirmed that the integrity of the structure can no longer stand the strength of the material, I mean the building. Therefore, advised that it be destroyed so that it does not take human life.
Does it have anything to do with the current dispute with the defected members of parliament?
No. It has nothing to do with it. Even the previous government had acknowledged that the building, which had not been maintained for 20 years, was in dilapidated state. And when this impact came, it destroyed the bond, the beams, and the major structures that are holding the building. It has nothing to do with the dispute, if there is any.
Why do you think this is happening in River State? I'm talking about the defection of the 27 members of parliament. Why is it happening?
Well, maybe the coincidences may look as if it has anything to do with the defection, but that is not the case.
So we understand the governor presented a budget today. Did he have a full session of the parliament?
Our estate law, the Constitution of Nigeria, says if Party A elects you into office and you decide to defect to another party, you lose your seat. So the 27 that left have declared their seats vacant. The speaker has already done that this morning, and then that gave a warranty for them to go on with the remaining number of persons who are members of the People's Democratic Party. That is the party that elected them.
So are you saying that the defected members have been replaced already?
The law says once you take that step, your seat is declared vacant. So, and the speaker has so announced that today. And it means that whatever it is, they will conduct by-election in the future.
In the meantime, the governor is left with a very small number of members of parliament.
Well, that's the number of persons who are legally expected to be there.
Joseph Johnson is River State Commissioner for Information. He was speaking with us from the state capital, Port Harcourt. And that's it for this Thursday, December 14th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for being our guest this morning. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I am James Barton in Washington saying, have a great day and please be safe whatever you do.